All right, Friday, November 3rd, 2017, and we are out of executive session and back in our regular meeting. And our old business is the Natural Hazards Migration Plan with Jack Aiken is present at our meeting.
That was some great editing. Really good. I appreciated it very much. After a while, your eyes start crossing.
How did we go from this to this? That's what I want to know.
Well, there's a lot of attachments that are required.
So the only attachment that we don't have in this package is our strategic plan. We all know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. That'd be another 150 pages here. So we need to make copies of that. So how are we going to review this?
Well, I don't know if you guys really want to thoroughly review this any more than you already have. You know, what I would like to do is, on your behalf, as soon as I possibly can, is get this into, what I'd do is I'll put the whole document together on a PDF and Dropbox it over to FEMA, to the HMGP program of the guy over there, and ask him and start. My next job is to constantly pester him, you know. They're an interesting little program in the sense that this kind of thing happens, and Gary's experienced this. I'll contact them and ask them, you know, what do you think of this? And then they'll come back later on and say, you really need to do this, this, and this, but don't do anything yet because I'm going to get back to you. And then a month goes by, and then they write back and say, I mean, are you even interested in this program? So they come back to me and say, Gary's experience gotten copied on that. So they're kind of like, they don't remember, I think. They have other things going. They don't remember what they're doing. So the best way to handle that particular group is to keep coming back to them, coming back to them, coming back to them. The key to me is on this is to get, yes, of course, we want to be able to get those other 51 piles, but we really like to get locked into become qualified for these other. Whoever heard of a FEMA pre-disaster department? That's pre-disaster funds, you know. But that's they have that. So the plan has a, obviously, as we said last meeting, has a dual purpose. So what I would think for the purposes of this meeting, by the way, is we did get requested public, right? So the fact that the public didn't show up is. What I've seen in others, it doesn't matter, as long as we did our stuff. And as long as you were on the paper's website. You know.
Yep.
So.
Did the paper get us on their website?
Yes, they did. I got a screenshot of that, so we have our backup.
And so, as far as comments, I ran into Willie. Gergen. I was trying to get some dried salmon, but they don't sell it there anymore. He told me how he would love to be able to see a hoist included. And I explained to him that that would easily be included in any project of redoing of a launch pad. You spend $99 a foot to put in a new launch area, a new receiving dock. You know, that it's small change. It sounds to me like the real issue that he was having was had nothing to do with me. Is having to do with wanting to go public with it or pay as charge or something like that, which is I'm not knowledgeable about. But I did want to put that comment in, because he had made some comments that, not particularly about the, that he wanted to include a voice, that a voice would be valuable in there. And so at least I'll have some one public comment, even though it wasn't at a particular meeting. And so the idea of this plan is, as you know, it's a living document. So it's supposed to be, it's not supposed to be perfect. It's supposed to be submitted, and I hope to hear from them soon saying, you know, I'd really like to see more detail about this or that, you know. But I think to put in more detail than is necessary without even really knowing, when I look at other plans, I see like real generalities, and then in one particular area they're very detailed. Well, I put in some good engineering detail on some areas, and if you want to read that, that's in there. I think I've justified fairly well. I had a lot of past work to depend on, and some other jobs that allowed me to get some good prices on things like, and summarize it, what this plan talks about is about 2,300 feet of, you guys all know this, about 2,300 feet of embankment repair, utilizing H-pile and concrete slab methodology. It was Gary's idea to try to pull that up against the embankment, and you'd be able to gain more moorage space by doing so, rather than utilizing a 1.5 to 1 slope and rock, which would maybe be cheaper, but it would take up more room, and the upright vertical approach is much better in terms of being able to get as much room as you can, gain 20 or 30 feet if you come up against the side bank. So and actually, in some areas you get up to 70 feet on the side bank.
I had one kind of afterthought that we didn't give you in our scoping last week, and I think I threw it in an email or something, but I obviously haven't had a chance to review this and see if there was any response. So we are looking at right now at a threat of sedimentation from the Chetco Bar fire, from its effects upstream. And we're looking at having to do dredging in the port as a result of that in the basin. And additionally, the Giacchina and the Corps of Engineers may have to do dredging of the bar. Is there any way we can, should we, and is there any way we can?
Absolutely should. I remember the email.
Yeah.
And I did not put it in. So okay. I should do it, and I should make sure it gets done. And also, in terms of dredging, that's a thought that I followed through but didn't finish on here. That should be on here too. It's going to be another big piece of change.
Indeed.
I should have done it. So, anyway, I'll do it. It won't take me long. And sedimentation. It's the whole reason why we did the bathymetric survey. You know, was to get the data, so we have numbers.
One other item I had brought up in comments was that wasn't in our original scoping was the road below the RV park that is graded towards the RV park, and there's these culverts that are plugged so it doesn't drain. And I don't know if we want to get that in this draft, or if that's low enough down the priority list we can pick it up in 5 years. I think it's part of why that road's so hard to maintain. And
there is no, so whoever put it in never put the drain lines in. It's bizarre. You got the catch basin, but
there's grates.
Yeah, but they didn't put the drain line.
Okay, Travis told me he had seen there, where the drain lines came out and they were plugged.
There's one.
Okay. But that maybe needs to be regraded, and so that debris doesn't accumulate in there and settle on the road. And when because I don't know if you're aware, Jack, but we do get, well, at least twice that we know of in the last 5 to 10 years that area has been overtopped. And Roger, same
thing. It's been overtopped every year since I've been redone the road.
Well, I didn't want to say often because we had some dispute when Harbor Sand claimed it was off.
It was only that bad in 2005 or 2007, and then 2016.
Gary, did you not try to submit to FEMA some debris costs as a direct result of?
Well, it was all these little tabs up here. We submitted $3 million, and that was part of the whole package.
Well, I don't know if it's possible to get that in this revision or not with our time constraints.
Oh, it's easy.
I don't know what you're going to do about it other than put a wall up or have the Corps of Engineers put their sand out there to make the thing higher. If you're on a boat down there, they dump the sand right in that front of the restroom. You go on down and see what the revetment is still 10 foot tall on the other end where they don't dump the sand. And that was a study done by Oregon State on how to save that revetment after they rebuilt it in 1996. And they dug it all out down about 20 feet deep and put rock in there. And so, I think it's...
Where's the...
In 95, the road was totally gone.
The water's totally gone?
Pretty well. The one lane was left.
The other question I have, so I think you want us to approve this document tonight, subject to these changes, is that so what you're looking for?
Yeah, condition on the what we're talking about adding to it, but I did want to, I'm trying to find, but for some reason, there's 9 pages missing that on mine, unless they're folded in somewhere else.
What page are you on?
I'm on page, I see between page 7 and page 16, I don't have anything.
I got 8, 9, 9. Is this what you're looking for?
Yeah, I've got. Okay, but it was an extra one you said? Right?
No, that's out of mine, but go ahead, use it for the moment.
I must have it, it must be around here somewhere, I think.
Well, that's my file.
No, yeah, leave my file.
Is it in here?
No, that's all right.
No, he's revised it.
He's revised that.
Yeah, this is a whole new package.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, mine is more. I have all the pages.
Well, I'm borrowing this one, and I'll just give it back. I'll keep track of the pages here. So what I'm trying to find.
The final one, anyway.
Yeah, give that to Danielle. I'll make copies for you, and then he can keep it.
I gave him 8 to 20.
Oh, here.
Just relax. I don't need it.
Okay.
I will get the final one. It's fine.
Okay.
It will be on our website.
It won't be fine.
I had one section for parking lot repairs based on feedback I got from one of you folks.
Okay, if it's already in there, that's great.
Let me see. But it's... I could add to it, because I did... I specifically spoke to... additional 90 pounds. There was a transit dock, commercial basin. Upland storage. General stormwater drainage. On page 13, the bottom paragraph. I added this. I spoke to basically talking about widespread drainage issues on Port of Brookings asphalt, concrete, and gravel surfaces, pooling and misdirected surface waters accelerate asphalt parking lot, subgrade degradation, potholes develop in graveled areas, and concrete cracking under unsupported loads are occurring. Protection against long-term, greater than 5 years, deterioration of surfaces at POBH can be relatively easily provided by the proper grading, resurfacing, and stormwater conveyance at areas approaching the ice house cold storage area. I put 84,000 square feet there. Upland storage area around above fuel storage area, 69,000 square feet. Sport Haven area, I put in 1,000 feet. The approach to the boatyard area in the beginning of the southeast corner of the commercial basin, basin two, 7,500 square feet. I talked about the minimal sub-base requirements for restoration, just basic details. I put 950,000 in there, which is about 1.5 times the cost it would actually cost. Because I, you know, you leave and you don't, you know, I listen to everything, every test pit I've done out here, like the ones I did out here in the parking lot, you know, you found rock on rock. There's a lot of rock. You know, I expected to find just nothing under there, but actually it was quite well. The subgrade was quite good, and leveling course was still even in place in many places. They just had to pour stormwater management on that parking lot. So I think in many cases, you know, that could be solved with this kind of approach. And so what I would probably want to do is go ahead and add the area around the RV in terms of square footage, use my same numbers in terms of the dollars.
Is it Sport Haven the same thing as the RV park? I mean, you mentioned Sport Haven. What do you mean by Sport Haven?
I meant that road over there.
That's what I was thinking. That's the RV park, isn't it?
It's more than 1,000 square feet.
I thought you were talking about a problem here at the Sport Haven restaurant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, not the RV park.
The RV park road is disaster.
Okay. Speaking of the RV park road.
Okay.
We're still paying on it.
I heard terminology of Sport Haven Beach. So when he said Sport Haven, I was just making sure we're talking.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like we are on two different things.
Right.
Okay, RV park. I'm going to add that in.
Yes.
Square footage.
Okay.
It's easy. One other thing that's when talking about, and Gary and I had talked about it, but I didn't include it, and I should. And it's talking about building up a little protection, perhaps about 4 feet on top of the rock. In other words, about a four foot rise on your.
On a boardwalk.
A rock in front of the RV area.
RV park. Right. That's what you're talking about, doing like a seawall.
Right.
Idea.
Yeah.
Jack, it amazes me because most of this land was marshy.
Right.
It was farmland, grew tussocks in it.
That picture right there.
Especially this area down in here. And
giant log pond and small area.
Yeah, there's a log pond over part of it. And then over in that area was a lagoon.
We're like the Dutch. I mean, we're just blocking the water out.
All right, so the process after tonight is what?
Well,
so some of it was in the plan, but could you just take us through it so we understand it?
Well, here's the thing. As you might remember, we had to do a cost-benefit ratio calculation through their really, really weird software, and that was satisfactory. That was happy. You know, surprisingly, she was happy with that. So
that was for the piling.
That was for the piling.
Not for this other stuff.
Right. And that was really on the idea that she had originally told us in writing that we would have a year to do this before funds could be released. Then she laid on us the bombshell that, she just found out that we have to have this submitted before we can be admitted into the program for funding. So the thing for us to do now is that, you know, obviously when we, as of last meeting, committed ourselves to really going for this, in a sense that we had already been committed because we'd already spent time and money on this already for the HMGP, that we would be able to pursue it aggressively, as far as, okay, we've given you what you said you needed, and if there's a problem with it, you need to let us know. January 31st is the due date where a finished, approved HMGP has to be in place. The reason I wanted to get it in by early November was because they could take up to 6 weeks, and I don't trust them, before they review stuff and then get back to me. And then what happens if I have, you know, to do something, you know, 3 days before, you know? So so my job, if you guys want me to, my job is to make sure that I bulldog this thing through, so we have a plan that's acceptable, and that they accept based on their, you know, somewhat. Very, very serious constraints, but nobody knows what they are.
So there was, in the plan, in the earlier draft, there was some discussion of comments over a period of days after we approve it.
Yeah.
That's sort of what I was wondering about more. Well, also what you said. But
it's like anything that I, in here, that I felt was going to be taking a lot of time and not necessarily going to be anything that's required from the plan, I deleted it. I went through, after I went through the editing, I deleted some more. And added germane things having to do with the guts of the costs versus benefits. And a cost, using their cost benefits software is not told to me to do for any of the guidelines. I have the software. You know, I just don't see it as part of, in fact, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me to do cost benefit when you're dealing with an ongoing living document. So I guess it's just a matter of seeing what they say about this plan, and as soon as possible. Now, he was supposed to get back to me, you might remember that, okay, before those meetings, and he didn't. So this is a prima facie example.
That was the FEMA, one of the FEMA guys?
Yeah, the FEMA guy that is actually the most communicative of all of them. And he never did. Now, I got back to him, I contacted him twice, but I wasn't bulldoggy about it. So now was the time to be bulldoggy about it. And if anybody else wants to give him a call, that won't hurt, especially, you know, the stakeholders, people that are... I mean, when guys like me speak, they go, yeah, okay. And when you guys speak, they go, well, yeah, okay, well, this is stakeholders here. People think it's the opposite, but really, it isn't. So, that's what I would recommend. If you guys approve this, now, it is based on the condition that I'm going to add at least three items. The items are, I'm going to add to my existing resurfacing to add the RV. I'm going to add the dredging costs that I know quite well. I have no reason to narrow it down to 1,000 cubic yards here, 5,000 there.
And then the seawall.
And the seawall is the third item. It's basically, I want to add 4 feet to that. And that would be with the standard ODOT 2000 is what I recommended for that. And I have those numbers, so.
And that seawall is attached to the already existing sidewalk jack somehow?
It's not attached to it, seawalls. I don't think it's attached to the seawall.
How would you make it stand up? You're talking about a seawall, 4 foot high seawall.
Now you're not talking, are you talking about the RV embankment park. Repair? You're talking about on the other side between the ocean and the RV park. That,
yes.
That correct. Rock jetty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to add to that.
To what?
Add to their existing rock. Get it
on the jetty wall?
No.
Yeah.
No. On a revetment in front of the RV park.
All right,
Jack's not understanding that.
Let's.
I think Roy, you're right. I don't understand.
We're talking
that.
Along.
He's talking about right here on the jetty wall. That's where he's talking about.
No.
Right where the cars park.
Where the cars park here.
Right there.
That rock through there.
Yeah.
Right. Revetment.
Revetment.
That's what it's called. That's when we put it in. It was called a revetment.
I say keep it a revetment, but that's the wall I'm talking about, Roy.
That's not the jetty goes out the ocean.
Yeah, I'm not going to mess around with the jetty.
Revetment goes.
Talking about regrading this road, and parking, and 4 foot of protection along.
Four foot higher.
Four foot higher than it is now.
Yes.
You know,
wall.
We include the surveyor's charges, which are minimal. Bang me some elevations and put 4 feet on top of it.
Like they have in Port Orford Battle Park.
So yeah, that would help us a lot.
I just want to inform the board. Today we had another Checo Bar Recovery Economic Meeting thing, and they were asking the port for a dredging number, for a possible dredging number that could be impacted. So within the next 3 years. So I came. Jan and I were discussing the dredging impacts and values, and we came up with $7.5 million So that's the place number that they put in their ask. At least that's what I asked them to put in there. It's kind of, the whole thing's kind of confusing what they're trying to do, but anyways.
That's gigantic.
If we get 4 inches of silt in there, it'll be amazing to me.
Well, so the discussion that... Well,
the survey I did is about 0.4 feet a year you get average here.
Yeah, and so...
I don't think we're getting much more.
No, it's probably about it.
So they have a range of values of how much extra sediment the river is going to carry, and the top end of the range is 900 times normal, not double, not three times, 900 times the normal amount.
That's their numbers, not...
That's their number. That's right. Their team's number.
Of the temp of sediment?
No, I only heard that coming out of the North Fork. I didn't hear the whole drainage, just the North Fork. The only number I've heard the discussion with the city of the water deal has been out of the North Fork, because that was most severely burned was up on Bravo Creek. One of the most severe burns I've ever seen.
That may be. I have the report now as of today, so I can look, but the number that was in the newspaper was 900 times, and I haven't heard anyone else dispute it. But in any event, Gary and I took the 5 inches a year average sedimentation rate, and we just very ballpark said three times that would be 15 inches a year, and we did that for 3 years, and so we said, okay, 4 feet. And we used a rate of removal based on the last time we did a FEMA removal was
Ice House,
$135 a square foot. And then
cubic yard.
Oh, cubic yard.
And then we
Of course, you know, that was because we had to take that stuff and deliver it.
Right.
Well, and where we then kind of just conceptually discussed contingencies, which we kind of assumed we're going to have to do a similar, you know, removal. It could be to a farther location. There's potential for having to resample to determine if it's hazardous material or not.
That's definite. They've already sent that requirement to us.
Yeah, so potentially our disposal costs go through the roof.
Right.
So we don't know what the contingencies are. We don't know what the sediment rate is, but we just kind of said, what's a conservative number based on where we're at? And so that without any contingencies at the 4 feet, we were at about 5 million, and 7.5 seemed like... If we took the 900 times, we would have some number that's,
right.
But we can. It's just right now a number that is in the governor's task force, and right. We can check on the 900 times and make sure if that's a real number or not. Roger.
The swag number, no matter how we look at it.
It's what it is.
Nobody knows.
You don't know until we get impacted, then all the numbers come out.
Yeah. So what I'm assuming is right now they're just sort of scoping a number, and then if some point comes around to where we might actually be in line for funding a number, I'm figuring somebody's going to say, okay, defend it, you know, sharpen your pencil. Figure it out for real, explain it. And maybe at that point we know more about what the actual sedimentation has been this year, or something.
I just wanted the board to know that I threw that number out in case somebody comes up and say, what was that guy thinking?
And this Basin 1, has it ever been dredged since it was built?
Yes, after the tsunami it was.
What?
Tsunami we took out.
But other than that?
Other than the, we took about 14,000 out of there.
When?
Basin, that was in 2011.
That was the tsunami. In the 40 years before that, has it ever been dredged?
No.
But not this basin. The only part that had ever been dredged prior to the tsunami
never
was the channel between the Coast Guard turn and north about 100 yards and south past the end of the transient dock.
I think they came on into the basin a little bit.
Yeah.
Now I have...
So that was 40 years of sediment.
Well, yeah, I have a... when I first came here, there was a guy by the name of John Craig. He was a Coast Guard guy. And he used to tell the port, advise them that don't worry about it. You know, you only have a few hundred cubic yards. And then he'd say, you can get a permit, just lower the amount you want. And of course, no, what they needed to do was they needed to go through the process of determining the amount of sludge, you know, and what it's, you know, what it was suitable to dispose to, and they had to take samples and so on, and get a permit, and a normal permit, joint permit application went through. In 2000, end of 2009, we realized that we needed to take a bathymetric survey in order to do that. So when we took the bathymetric survey, that was fortunate because that's how you got your FEMA money. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I saw about a total from the bathymetric survey of about 130,000 cubic yards to bring it down to where it was originally. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a trivial amount of sediment that's out there. It's underwater, so you don't see it. But you know, John Craig was wrong, and there's a lot of sediment out there.
The only other comment I have on what we told the state, since we're discussing that a little bit, is to make sure they understand we're not talking about the Corps of Engineers dredging the channel.
Right.
That's
right.
A completely
they always make that. They really get that mixed up.
Yeah, they asked me if that price was part of that. I said, no, that's strictly the harbor. And they would probably have to contact Corps of Engineers to find out what they would have.
It's 500. They spend about 600,000 a year.
Is that right?
Yes, yeah, 750 was the last year.
I have a feeling Gold Beach is going to be seeing them more next time around and us less.
They haven't dredged Gold Beach for how many years now?
I don't know, but I drove by it one time today and it does not look good.
Traffic.
Biggest trouble there is their migrating gravel that comes down the Rogue River.
So Gary made a comment on that too. Do you want to relay what Dave said? Or Frank? Or what? Frank.
Yeah, Frank. When I was riding up, looking at the tour of the fires and stuff, I guess the Rogue River. He said it was the Rogue River.
Yeah.
Apparently, the Biscuit Fire, when they had their fire, he called it a wad of material coming down. When he called it a wad, I think it's the heavier gravel coming down, being pushed by the water. It took about 10 years. Now it's impacting the port.
Right.
10 years later, it's now impacting. So. When I was in that meeting, when Jen was in that meeting too, I told him that we don't know what we're going to have 3 to 5 years. What kind of number do you want from me? That's why we got a little worried about the number.
Rivers have never recovered from the 64 flood. The Rogue hasn't, the Smith hasn't, and the Chetco hasn't. Changed it totally in the 64 flood.
The Rogue base filled in because they took out Savage Rapids Dam and Gold Ray Dam. That was directly after those dams were taken out. The Rogue Bay has been getting shallower and shallower.
So with regard to the natural hazards mitigation plan, you would like an approval tonight. Obviously, we have not all had a chance to read the latest draft, and we've also asked for a few additions. I'm asking the board if people feel comfortable approving it at this time, or I think we all have a pretty good general idea what's in it, or if we want to maybe have a very brief additional meeting to approve it, or what the sense is.
Well, it's a living document, as he says, so we can change it. It's going to be changed and worked the next number of years, right?
Yes. Now, don't let me think that I want you to approve this tonight. That's the only reason I will want to is your best interest to get it out there as soon as possible.
Correct. And we're going to get another shot at it after FEMA's had comments.
Absolutely. Yeah. They will have. I can assure you, they will have comments.
So I think I'm reasonably comfortable with sending this to FEMA as is.
Well, with the additions that you want, the dredging,
yes,
and the other items.
Dredging, okay. RV park on page 13 in the seawall.
Yeah.
I make a motion we approve the mitigation plan as written with the additions in it.
I second that.
Any other discussion?
Andy?
Yes.
Roy?
Yes.
Roger?
Yes.
Jan?
Yes.
Angie?
Yes.
Thank you for that, Jack.
Yes, thank you very much.
You come home now.
Yeah.
Have you been here all week?
Yes. I had to. I got to check out. I have to be able to come out here and measure stuff and look at stuff.
I'm not complaining.
So, I know no choice if you're going to have it done in a reasonable amount of time.
All right. You want to get out of here, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't, unless you want something, I mean...
Nope, I think we'll...
No, but I'm trying to get out of here soon. I mean, once you've fallen off the cliff, you know, you just have to enjoy the ride. So no chance.
Jack, with just the few changes, what do you see for time turning it in for the first time, for the first go-round?
You know, I got to get it in by... I got a colonoscopy on Thursday.
Thanks for sharing.
Probably. I thought, well... I'm also doing an endoscopic thing too.
Jeez.
Yeah, so they figured when you're asleep, might as well do it all. I would like to try to get this done but before that, if I can.
Good. Before this coming Thursday?
Yeah, if I can. Yeah.
Okay.
I have people that are quite insulted by the fact that I am not at their beck and call right now, so.
I can, when he sends it, he's going to email me, and I can email the rest of the commissioners saying it's done, so you guys at least know it's been submitted.
And you know, a lot of the things you're asking for example, dredging costs, I'm going to use yours, right? Your costs, because, I mean, otherwise I put my hand to the numbers I know, you know, what it costs to analyze, I know how many samples they want, I know what, you know, and of course, you had an assumption of $7.50 a cubic yard, right? Whereas, you know, to give you an idea, it's all over the map. We were able to, as a coalition, do it for $350 a yard. But I know that if you contracted Coos Bay, you might better get a better deal out of them. But it was $30 a yard for Moab and Demoab and everything else like that originally when we got all our bids in, $30 to $35 a yard. You know, just contracting with somebody else.
Yeah.
You know? Well, apparently when we did the ice house, they had a lot of the expense, I'm being told, had to do with setting up the upland.
Totally.
And then hauling it off.
And but, I mean, it was the only way to deal with this stuff. Unfortunately, it was paid for. So.
Yeah. So do you feel that the number that Gary and I worked up to give the governor is unreasonable?
No, I'm just going to use it. Because it
doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, as I said last meeting, I think they really don't pay much attention to whether it's 10 million or it's 20. Now, we have 18 here. I might have said 20 or 40. I don't remember what I said, but it's true. I mean, to them, you know, you're talking about something that's, you know, many, many millions of dollars worth of income through this facility. And the argument that we have in here is that, and someone said, you use 100%? I said, actually... I don't see why we shouldn't use 100%. Who was it that said that? One of you folks, you. And I thought, well, I was just trying to be conservative. I thought, Jack, why? You know, when you said that, I said, why am I being conservative? So I put the 100% of the economic benefit.
Well, because you had said that the port would become inoperable within 5 to 7 years if we don't address these, and I'm saying, well, if it's inoperable, that's 100%.
Well, I believe you've got a good chance of that happening, 5-7 years.
So
enough of a chance to try to do something to stop it. The payback, if we can get that stick of benefit to cost ratio of nearly 8, is outstanding. I mean, if you get a 2 or 3, that's high. So. We'll see how they.
We're going to drop it a little with these additions. But
not much.
Yeah.
Not much. So.
All right. We got more of the meeting to go.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
You got more meeting to do?
Yeah,
oh, boy. Sorry to hear that. All right.
Won't be much longer.
Don't forget your
What are these?
I need a computer.
I didn't bring my computer this time. After that last time. I don't need this because I have all this.
Okay. Well, you have notes in there somewhere.
That's right. I do need it. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. Bye.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Good evening, Dad.
Thank you. I'll see you later. Bye.
This is your dad. You sitting over here.
I know. That seat is warmer. So I just ask a question before Jan gets back. We now have Chetco Seafood property sale, but we don't need to discuss that because we've already discussed that, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. But
that was there just in case we wanted to make a motion or okay. whatever, so we can
skip that.
Move on.
All right.
And I'll also hand this out while Jan is.
Not the Lord give you permission to buy the damn thing.
I know, but this is an update.
Government.
What's going on with your printer?
This was before Daniel fixed it.
Oh.
No.
What are you saying? It's available.
What?
The second page.
Yeah, number three. Took too long.
Did you get locked in there?
I think I did, yeah.
A little tricky.
Okay, old business. See the reach lift. And Gary's passed out a...
Yeah, a packet. So it's 6 pages worth. First 2 pages is what I sent to the commissioners already. We got approval from... IFA to pursue it and go ahead and get more debt if we want. Third page is the availability. We've lost our chance of getting it in December, but there's more units coming January, February, and March. So January, February, on page 4, the January, February ones are ones without AC, then the March one has AC, and of course our operator would love to have AC in his rig. So, anyways.
It's working.
Yeah. Well, it does get hot sitting in the rig, but I kind of left it, I want to leave it up to the board if you want to go wait another month to get one with AC.
Is there a price difference?
The cost doesn't make any difference. Now on page four. Uh-oh, let me see, excuse me. So, the next page.
Is that renting?
Well, the next page, yeah, United Rentals. The price went up on the unit on page, the next page after that is page 5, which I put a line through it. The manual quick attach carriage, we want a 72 inch, not a 48 inch. Mm. So that increased the price, it's like $900. Mm-hmm. So, and then the last question I kind of want to throw out the board, just another option. We're already looking at Umpqua to loan the $100,000. So now we got, you know, the 4 months down the road, we're gonna get tax money. Does the board want me to just pay this thing off and not have this $22,000 paying in 7 years? Save $22,000?
Well, in your loan, can we make, you know, you make extra payments. We come into some money, it would take the interest rate down. So let's say we pay an extra...
It's not going to take an interest rate down.
Not
it's
going to
reduce the amount of interest you pay over the life right. of the
loan. Let's say we paid $1,600 a month. Help, I hate taking extra cash out of our pocket. We've got other things I think are more important.
Oh, I'm just throwing it out.
I am concerned about getting through the winter months as far as cash flow goes with the RV park performing the way it is. If we were to emerge in March and feel we had the cash, I'd be open to the discussion at that time, but I would think getting the loan in place and approved and being ready to go with the loan would be prudent, and I'm suspecting that we will have utilized some of the tax money to sustain operations through the winter. How are we doing right now? We're still kind of, we lost a little in the last month, is that correct?
Yeah.
But that was mainly due to depreciation, not
cash flow. Yeah, if you don't count your depreciation, we're okay with cash flow. So getting a loan through Umpqua, which I believe that's the best route, I just need the board. We got to go through, there's like four or five different steps we got to go through in a public meeting. Got to have the board approve that we're going to go with Umpqua. It's got to be in the meeting minutes. So if we want to do that now and get that over with, and then, you know, there's all those little steps, or we can just do it on the November meeting, whichever way you guys, if you guys want to see all the documents.
It needs to be in the minutes for the bank to even start that process.
Right. Yeah, it's just it's going to take probably a month just to go through all this process, but I got to go in front of the board, so.
Did we check with Rogue? I don't remember. It's been so far.
Rogue won't do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion that that Gary proceeds with setting up a loan for the telehandler with Umpqua Bank.
I'll second that.
And then the reason I made that motion now is that way that it takes a while to get the minutes even, so
yep.
This will, you know, save a couple of weeks.
Any other discussion?
So are we looking at the purchase then in March with the air conditioner? Is that what we're
doing? I think all we're doing right now is discussing what bank we're going to
get the loan.
Get the loan set up. And then we can get to
it. It would be good to nail down which piece of equipment we want, because we could lose these things if we take
the loan. And we will, but now we just, let's have a roll call on Umpqua.
Okay. Jan.
Yes.
Roger.
Yes.
Roy.
Yes.
Andy.
Yes.
Angie.
Yes. Now let's discuss which piece of equipment we're going to get so he knows what to.
I don't think there's any question on what piece, is there?
No.
The January, February, or March piece of equipment.
What's the status of the removing the docks or going forward with the boat launch dock replacement?
That's still proceeding.
Because it's going to be used for part of that?
Yeah, but it's going to be in June, or probably be in the June, May, June time frame when that happens. We'll have our piece of equipment.
We're going to have to keep the rental no matter what, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, that's the next problem. But
so I think we're looking at about a $15,000 difference from January to March.
Yes. Well, it could be 6 weeks difference on timing and shipping and when they assemble it in the. Because it comes overseas, they assemble it in America, then it comes out. It's very bizarre. But there's something else I wanted to say. Can't remember what it was. Oh, we're looking at renting a Genie instead of the Cat, and we could save $1,200 or $1,000 a month. So we're thinking about switching it out. We'll save some money.
Yeah. When you put the Cat logo on it, it goes up in price. Yellow paint.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know a lot about equipment other than John Deere tractors, and I never had an air conditioning in my tractor, but I can tell you that it gets hotter than heck. And
in Glendale, or we're in Brookings?
No, I mean just from the equipment being hot when you're running, field. But that's the only expertise I have. So yeah.
I'm not an operator either, but I know past in Southern California, because it's really hot down there, but air conditioning is preferred by operators.
But you, this one, the engine's not right in front of you either.
I guess
the engine's behind you.
The question I would have is, and I could say that, you know, like coming out for the car show and sitting on the tarmac, it gets pretty darn hot. You're out all day. Do we anticipate that this machine will be in use, you know, 45 minutes here, an hour there, a few times a month, or do we think we're going to have days during the hot period of the year where the operator's in the machine all day long, eight-hour shift?
It varies. It's all over the place.
I think we should look at also resale value.
I don't know about, but I think I don't look to make short-term decisions. I would say to wait and get the piece you want. That would be my.
But it's going to cost us a lot of money to wait till March for a rental.
Worst case, you're going to wait until February. So if you're going to wait until March, you're waiting extra 6 weeks probably.
Oh, well,
possibly.
I say we wait till March and let them. I don't want a bunch of whiners down here. But that's all they will. If they're real operators, they wouldn't whine. But there's whiners. They're not like operators used to be for reserve.
And most equipment operators, as myself for 9 years, didn't have brand spanking new equipment. That's brakes right. Didn't work. I got pictures of me on a runaway roller that destroyed a house, lumber, trees, put me in the hospital for a month. Yeah, we're lucky to have brand spanking new equipment.
I prefer
to whine about not having air conditioning in Brookings, Oregon.
But I mean, you know, if we can get new and we can get air conditioned, then I'm all for waiting for that extra time.
The only thing we're waiting for is the air conditioning.
Did I hear a motion?
I make a motion we buy this fancy one with air conditioning in it in March.
I second that.
Is that delivery in March?
That's,
or is it wait until they have it in stock in March?
We hope to have it delivered in March.
Okay, yes.
Okay. Andy.
Yes.
Roy.
Yes.
Jan.
Yes.
Roger.
Yes.
Angie.
Yes.
All right. Boy. One more thing.
Travis. New business mortgage waiting list.
Okay, so you probably heard about the waiting list kind of snafu that we had with Brett Dresden at Chantel C. So yesterday I had a meeting with Brett. I asked two commissioners to come sit in with me and the staff and Brett to discuss his vessel. So the comment came about the waiting list. And do we have a waiting list? Well, we have one, but it's kind of unofficial. And then some of the questions was we don't have like a resolution or whatever else. But anyways, I did some research today. We do have a resolution. There was one done in 2000, resolution 335, and it's $25 every 2 years to stay on that waiting list, and that's pretty much all that resolution said. It didn't have a policy, didn't have a, you know, application, whatever else. So I did some more research. Within our files, I found an application to our waiting list. Last time I think it was used back in 2008. It's pretty blank. It's just one sheet. So I did some more research on other ports, and other ports, they all have elaborate waiting lists, policies, procedures, and that stuff. So I like to put that stuff together, bring it to the board next meeting, and let the board decide. I asked Skyler to go through all these other ports and to kind of make one for us, and I'll present it to the board. So we have something in place that we can follow, because right now it's kind of pick and choose who you get on the waiting list and whatever else. So
I Gary, I think a person wants to be on the waiting list, they got to put some money down, because you turn, or I hate waiting lists anyway, because the experience in RV park, you call them, oh, I've got another place already, but maybe right. Not mortgage. But isn't rule on mortgage, I have a 24-foot bullet. If I want to run a 30-foot slip, I pay for the 30-foot slip. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So that's what I thought. So if you had a 70-foot slip, the guy is willing to pay for it, and he's got a 24-foot boat, he goes in there no matter what.
Correct.
Okay. That's just what I wanted to clarify that. And that was my understanding, but
right. If he wants to pass it, from what I've seen on other ports, if they want to pass on it, they allowed. He can pass on it, but he stays up on the top of the list.
Right.
And then
until that size slip.
And a lot of the ports, they have an application fee, so you have a one-time fee that's non-refundable. And typically, they're $50 to get to do the application. Then you have a yearly. Other ports have yearly ones. This port here right now, as resident says, it's every 2 years. So I'll probably be asking the board to update that because it is 17 years old, that resolution. So, or you want to keep it the same, it's fine with me. I just want direction on it. Yeah. So,
Jerry, on that, is it the same for a sport boat and a commercial boat, or is it different?
Other ports, it didn't matter. And I like to leave that the same way. It doesn't matter here because right now we have boats all over the place, and as far as I'm concerned, terminology out here now should be Basin 1, Basin 2, could be sport, commercial, charter, could be whatever.
But we have a difference in our rates for sport versus commercial?
Yes, big difference.
Yes.
And that is based on which basin they're in, based on the use of the
commercial license.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm in favor of formalizing the policy, and I think that's consistent with the board direction of trying to create level playing fields wherever we run into
issues.
Yes, thank you, and applaud you for bringing the idea to the board.
I think there ought to be some more discussion about that waiting list too. Because it's never worked. And if this is written up the same as it is now, the configurations, the utilization of the size slips we have, like I used Chuck Case yesterday as an example. He's in a 70-foot slip, and he's a 38-foot boat. He's obviously paying for that slip, probably. But he could also,
I don't know what he's paying. That's other things we have to research and find out what he's paying. You got to remember, a year ago, all these rates were whacked out on both sides. So we just finally got everything brought up to par. And I mean, there's a lot of weird things that were going on before. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some either mistakes or whatever they're not getting charged right.
And then the other thing, what the other commissioners know, is that some of those boats down there are taking up two slips. Due to the configuration of our basin that was built after the tsunami. So some of those boats are taking up two slips, am I correct?
That is correct. And they're paying for two slips.
Correct.
Is that on...
Or like the Noah's Ark ties up, and the CJ ties up, and the Pacific Hooker ties up.
But they didn't do anything that part of the basin after the tsunami.
Well, they didn't. It wasn't even there when it was gone, when it was over.
Q-Dog. Mm-hmm.
Was quite, we're nothing standing there at all. And then they put those docks back. Okay. That's when we have problems with the engineers because the board never signed off on that.
The configuration of our Basin 2, I call it Basin 2. I like calling it commercial because there's too many recreational boats in there. It should be just Basin 2.
Well, originally called it commercial basin because you had to have a commercial license to be parked in it at one time.
Yeah, but it's not... It's. That's gone away.
And how did that go away and when?
All I know, we have boats spread out everywhere in that basin, and that's the way it is now. And to me, it's going to be a nightmare it's a nightmare trying to move anybody out of a slip that they're currently in, no matter where they're at. It's worse than pulling teeth. Mm. It's bad because they start arguing. Yeah, see, they start arguing like crazy, and. I mean, it's almost impossible. That's why it's so hard. It's easy to say, just move that guy over here, but Daniel's right there. She can tell you how. We've been trying to find a place for the Whaleys, for their big boats.
Gave up on it.
It's impossible. We finally got a spot where he could go use two slips, but then he had, well, I'm going to hit this boat. I'm going to hit that boat. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I can't use it. It's like, well... He wants that special spot where he can just pull right in and pull right back out.
Maybe learn how to drive a boat then.
Well,
that's what I'm getting at. If I'm parked somewhere, it doesn't matter what slip I'm in, because I can drive a boat.
Yeah. Well, basically...
But I understand what you're saying, Gary. It is hard, and there's...
Right.
There's no easy answers. You guys are doing a super great job with what you got to work with.
So I look forward to seeing that on the next meeting, since I requested that and was told no.
Yeah, and I will say about Gary, every time I've had a problem with something, he's already been there and started resolving it, pretty much.
You know what amazes me about boat slips? I've not had a boat parked next to me all year.
Well, so is there any slip there we put somebody in?
Someone's paying for it.
I don't think so.
How would you know if they're paying for it? Do you work in the office? Do you do the billings?
That basin 2 is like 99%, and we do that on purpose because we want to have a couple extra spots just for emergencies and moving people around. So.
And basin 1 is?
Basin 1 is 70-ish
percent. Well, the problem with basin 1 is a dang short slip since we don't have boats to fit in because they're not big enough.
It's 100% with electrical. It's we are full. If all those slips were electrical, we would probably be closer to 90%.
Oh, that went, never mind however that money went that was supposed to go in there.
Okay. Do we have any non-agenda related public comments? Media adjourned.